informative guests, and you get one of the most listened to Saturday morning streaming media political talk shows going today. And it's all right here on our flagship station, Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. So join me, The Fetch, for Inside the Eye Live every Saturday morning at 10 o'clock a.m. Eastern. It is truly intelligent media for the politically aware.
Ideas are shared, and friendships are formed. So why not join the information revolution at freedomslips.com, where information never sleeps.
In your mind, does the world seem inverted? Backward, dissonant, dare to think out loud. You see your rights, freedoms, your very way of life being attacked, systematically eroded. Dare to think out loud. You observe traitorous evil rewarded, stealing the future from your children and grandchildren. Dare to think out loud. You question all the jingoistic propaganda claimed to be history. Dare to think out loud. You have tuned in to the right show. Dare to think out loud. Here's an expert on original source true history, your host, the Rebel Madman, Michael Gaddy.
Well, welcome, everyone, to Dare to Think Out Loud here on the 25th day of February in the year of 2022. And I am joined today by my good friend and compatriot, Cal Robbins, out there in western Arizona. Cal, how are you today?
Doing good, Mike. Thanks for asking. How you doing?
I'm coming right along for an older fella. You know, I would complain, but hell, I can't find anybody to listen.
Yeah, most people don't care, do they?
Well, and we are also very fortunate to have with us our good friend and compatriot, Scorpio, Dave Scorpio. Dave, how are you, buddy?
I'm doing pretty good, Mike. Cal, enjoying the day here. I'm looking forward to our conversation, sir.
Well, you're out there in California. How are things going?
Oh, just getting ready for $5 plus gas here coming up in the next few weeks. So, yeah, looking forward to that.
Well, you haven't been invaded by Russia yet.
No. No, it will be invaded by China maybe, but not. Well, we already have been invaded by China here in California. So.
Yeah, Long Beach belongs to China, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah, and they own tremendous amounts of real estate here, too. It's actually unbelievable.
Oh, yes, that's for sure. Well, Dave, can you tell the folks how they can help us out here at Revolution Radio to continue this venture that we're on?
Well, sure. Guys, you know, Revolution Radio is 100% listener funded. So come aboard revolution.radio or freedomslips.com. That's freedomslips.com. Become a Patreon member or go to the Zazzle store. There's some cool stuff for sale there, too. Or if you scroll down to the bottom of the home page, you'll see a mailing address where you can send in donations the old-fashioned way.
Thanks, Dave. And, folks, we're going to have a special guest today, which I'm going to call here in just a minute or so. But I did want to let everyone know that Sunday evening at 6 p.m. Eastern, my steady companion there, DW, the retired commercial airline pilot, and I will be joined by Blackbird 9, a former government intelligence operative, and we are going to be talking about his favorite subject, Russia, Russia, Russia. So hope you folks will be able to join us, and now I'm going to give our special guest a call and see if we can bring him into the conversation, folks, and it will be Mr. John Jay. Hang on.
I think Mike has had some technical problems here getting the guest on. Okay, we're going to get Mike back on here. He had a technical problem, so stand by. Uh-oh.
Did we lose Mike, Dave?
Yeah, he had a problem when he tried to get the guest on. I'm calling him back now.
Okay.
Here he
is. Hey, buddy, you got me?
Yes, sir. We can hear you fine.
All right, John, can you hear us, sir? Oh, wow. This is going to be more and more fun. I had him on, and then I lost you guys, and now now we're back on, and we've lost him.
Well, Mike, you have to make sure to merge the guests with the call, not otherwise you create a new call. So,
yeah.
Okay.
Well, I thought I did a merge, but it says plus at the top. Is that right, buddy? I'm sorry.
Yeah, the plus with the little head and shoulders on it. Yeah, and then just go on your dial pad.
Okay, well, let me try that and see how that works again. Let's hopefully it will work this time without dropping you guys off. First day with my new brain, folks. Please excuse me. So hopefully we can get this done here very quickly, because I was talking with John, our guest, and then suddenly here we are. So let's try this again.
It must be the Russians interfering with your phone.
Yeah, it's got to be the Russians. It's got to be. I mean, nobody else would do this to us, right?
Well, that's the only explanation, Mike.
I mean, no such agency wouldn't do this, right? Okay, let me see how this works. Well, it says call the number or add. It will not let me add. What's going on here?
Well, if you click on that, head and shoulders with the plus, then
right
at the top there's a dial pad.
Yeah, I did that, and that's when I got cut off from you guys before.
Okay, we'll try it again, because that's the only way you can get them on.
Hang on, I'm going to try it one more time.
I guess the other way we could, if this doesn't work, we could just end the call completely and call him first, and then I'll add everyone else on.
Okay, let's give it a shot, okay? I'm calling him now.
Okay. No, it looks like Mike's getting the same problem he did before, so. Let's give it a minute here.
I'm still showing Mike on mine.
Yeah, but see, do you see the pause button next to his name? He's paused on the call. For some reason, it's not. He started a new call with the guests. It's not merging for some reason with the thoughts. And I would do it, but I can't. I'm not able to call phone numbers with my Skype. So it looks like Mike has dropped off the call. So I'm going to have to boot him off the call and then bring him back on. So just 1 minute. Maybe, Cal, you could say something interesting in the meantime.
Oh, sure. Leave it to me. I wouldn't even know where to start. Everybody wants to talk about Russia, Russia, Russia. And I've got no answers on Russia, Russia, Russia. I'm still trying to figure out what's going on. I can't believe anything Western media says. So that leaves you kind of taking Putin at his word, and then you got to kind of question that. So I really don't know where to – I don't have enough knowledge to comment properly on Russia, Russia, Russia. One of the reasons I'm looking forward to Sunday night's show so we can get some intake from people who have a little bit more experience on this. Well, Mike's back on.
Well, yeah, one thing's for sure, Cal, you can't believe a word we're hearing from the enemy war transmissions known as the mainstream media. It's all propaganda and how, you know, there was no provocation whatsoever. And, well, here's Mike. Mike, are you there, sir?
Well, I'm here, but I think we lost our guest again. This is just one Charlie Foxtrot.
Oh, okay, Mike, I think the way to do this is to end this call and call your guest first, and then I'll come on and add Cal and then the station.
Okay, let's give it a shot.
I think that's the only way we can get the guest on.
All right.
So buddy. I need to hang up?
Well, I'm going to end this call. I'll kick everybody off of it. And then, Mike, in the meantime, you call your guest, and then I'll call you, and then I'll bring Cal and the station on.
Okay, buddy. Thank you.
Okay, great. Okay, so everybody stand by. Sorry about this.
Right.
Okay, Mike, you're back up. I'm going to bring Cal on. Go ahead, sir.
All right, buddy. Folks, we certainly apologize for all the technical difficulties here. We are trying to bring on a guest that is just not working. They obviously don't want us to talk to this guest, so what can I say? So anyway, we will bring Cal on, and we will jump into a conversation here with Dave, who can be with us for the first hour. So totally appreciate you folks' patience in bearing with us here for about 10 to 15 minutes. I very much apologize for these
technical difficulties. Okay, we have Cal now, too.
Can you guys hear me?
All right, guys. Have we got it so far?
Can you hear me?
I can hear you fine.
Okay. I'm in then.
All right.
All right. Well, we are going to move along without our guest, unfortunately. And that really bothers me. But anyway.
That's odd they wouldn't let that happen.
Yeah. And you know, it's not like it's that we've never done it before, because constantly when I bring on Dale Williams, it's always by phone, and we've never had, well, you know, he has some connection issues from time to time, but, you know, it just really bothers me that we couldn't bring him in, but we'll jump ship here, guys, and we'll talk about current events. Dave, what is your thoughts on what we're being told about what's happening in the Ukraine?
Well, Mike, I'm really interested to hear your take on this. I guess the first thing is that we really don't have enough verifiable real information to have any idea what is going on, other than, you know, Russia is definitely doing some strategic surgical strikes to disable the Ukrainian army. I think that's pretty much all we know for sure. How far he intends to go and whether or not he intends to take Kyiv and topple the government, I think those are real questions. But I find that the narrative coming from the enemy war transmissions that we call the mainstream media or the oligarch media, their take on this is so childlike. And, you know, it's incredible how, well, Ukraine has to be part of NATO. I mean, that's worth a war, isn't it? And you know, Putin had been saying for many years, over a decade, that Ukraine can never be part of NATO, which is a completely reasonable demand on any, no matter how you look at it, it's completely reasonable. Yet that was off the table from the beginning by the warmongering administration that's in charge of our nation right now, Mike.
Well, Dave, have you seen the English translation of Putin's speech this morning?
I did not hear the one this morning, no. I heard the one the other day, though. But go ahead. Okay. No, I have not.
All right. Well, here's what I have, what I just received. And I will put it out there, and then Cal and Dave, let's comment on it. And I quote, I consider it necessary today to speak again about the tragic events in Donbass and the key aspects of ensuring the security of Russia. I will begin with what I said in my address on February 21st of 2022. I spoke about our biggest concerns and worries and about the fundamental threats which irresponsible Western politicians created for Russia consistently, rudely, and unceremoniously from year to year. I am referring to the eastward expansion of NATO, which is moving its military infrastructure ever closer to the Russian border. It is a fact that over the past 30 years, we have been patiently trying to come to an agreement with the leading NATO countries regarding the principles of equal and indivisible security in Europe. In response to our proposals, we invariably faced either cynical deception and lies or attempts at pressure and blackmail. While the North Atlantic Alliance continued to expand despite our protests and concerns. Its military machine is moving and, as I said, is approaching our very border. Why is this happening? Where did this insolent manner of talking down from the height of their exceptionalism, infallibility, and all permissiveness come from? What is the explanation for this contemptuous and disdainful attitude to our interest and absolutely legitimate demands? The answer is simple. Everything is clear and obvious. In the late 1980s, the Soviet Union grew weaker and subsequently broke apart. That experience should serve as a good lesson for us because it has shown us that the paralysis of power and will is the first step towards complete degradation and oblivion. We lost confidence for only one moment, but it was enough to disrupt the balance of forces in the world. The imbalance of force has been corrected, and since force is all that the West understands, Russia is using force to end the use of Ukraine as a pawn against Russia. In the past, the stupid and arrogant West ignored Russia's warnings. And so then he says, ominously, I would now like to say something very important for those who may be tempted to interfere in these developments from the outside. No matter who tries to stand in our way, or all of the more so create threats for our country and our people, they must know that Russia will respond immediately and the consequences will be such as you have never seen in your entire history. No matter how the events unfold, we are ready. All the necessary decisions in this regard have been taken. I hope that my words will be heard. Unquote. Thoughts, gentlemen?
Well, I'll just jump in quickly then, Cal. You know, it's really incredible how reasonable and rational everything he's saying is, yet they're trying to imply that Putin may have lost his mind. You know, he's insane. And, you know, what's really interesting to me here, Mike, is that I think Russia, unfortunately, has every right to be doing what they're doing. And I think we're going to see a shock wave of fear throughout all of NATO and Europe. If Ukraine falls as quickly as reports are saying, that essentially they've already decapitated the Ukrainian military already. It's already been done, and it's just a matter of the end game now. If that's true, there's going to be a shockwave of fear all across NATO and in the Western world because the Russian military is proving to be a formidable force, and it's nothing to mess around with. It's not going to be like invading, Afghanistan or Iraq.
Well, that's exactly true, and I thought it was unique in that Putin says he does not intend to occupy the Ukraine. That's not his intention whatsoever, but he's not going to allow NATO to occupy the Ukraine either. Your thoughts, Cal?
These two big powers going against each other. Part of the back of my mind goes is these guys are still both puppets on this world theater stage. And what if all of this is just a distraction over everything else that's going on? I mean, how much news media is there on this convoy that's rolling across the United States now?
Well, absolutely none.
Is this just these actors acting this out to distract everybody from what's going on? Yeah, it could have World War III consequences. But it makes no sense what's going on to me.
Hey, Cal, Yeah. I love you, buddy. But do me a favor. When you ask me a question, give me a chance to answer the first
Sorry,
one.
Mike. Sorry, Mike. Sorry, Mike. They come out of my – I'm surprised by my questions as they roll out of my mouth as anybody else. So, yeah. Go ahead, Mike. Sorry
about
that.
Just give me a break between questions. Okay. I start to answer, and then I have another question. That's okay, yeah. Buddy. Love you. I have said this the same thing. I said, Dave, I believe on your 100th anniversary show, I said that if this government begins to see that its narrative about the COVID bullshit is falling apart, they will do something to distract. They have to take the people's attention away. And if we go back to the Carnegie Foundation, what they told the Reese Commission was that in instances like this, they must suddenly bring up something which will cause the American public to stand up, pledge allegiance, and salute the flag. So, Cal, your response is spot on.
Well, yeah, they said that, and in order to get people to stand up and do that, create a war somewhere, and that was the plan way back in 1909, was it?
Well, yes, that was what the Carnegie Foundation said. And are either of you gentlemen familiar with a person from that time era by the name of Randolph Bourne?
No. No, I am not.
No, not at all. No.
Well, Randolph Bourne, unfortunately, the man passed away before he could complete his essay. But I have the partial essay of what he did, and he wrote back then. And he very succinctly, the title says it all. War is the health of the state. And what war does is it suddenly amalgamates, brings everybody together. It cements the people into one. So they forget all of the extraneous things that are going on in their life. And suddenly we all have to rush to the defense of our country. But in actuality, we're not rushing to the defense of our country. We're rushing to the defense of our crooked politicians.
Wow. Yeah, Mike. And I think you're bringing up a really crucial point, which is the timing of this is at the very least suspicious. Just as the COVID narrative is completely, unraveling like a cheap sweater around the world. And then simultaneously, every government just about in the Western world anyway says, oh, well, there's no more COVID. We just have to learn how to live with it. Just move on. After 2 years of it's the most deadly disease in the world. And then all of a sudden, that they just flick the switch. That's turned off. And then now here we are in this war that could really become a very dangerous thing depending on how the West responds to it.
Well, Dave, a very good point. And just recently, my friend, our friend, Robert Hudson out there in Nevada, said that he was just informed. He has a trip planned, airline trip planned in March. And he was just informed yesterday that masks are no longer required.
Wow.
So here we are. This narrative, this COVID narrative is falling apart. Thank you, truckers in Canada. They really, I think they were the accelerant that the government wasn't prepared to deal with. So we're having this, and of all things, two mornings ago, I walked into my favorite Cracker Barrel restaurant to have breakfast. And I noticed that about half of the wait staff was masked and the other half wasn't, which was new. So I sit down in my seat, and the lady comes over to take my order. And as she came walking up, I said, thank you. And she said, wait a minute, I haven't even taken your order. Thank you for what? And I said, well, thank you for not wearing a mask. And she said, yeah. She said, isn't that some crazy stuff? She said, I was so happy when management told us we didn't have to. It was our choice. We could wear it or not wear it. And I said, wow, choice in America. What a concept. And she laughed, and we kind of talked about it. But as I was leaving, I saw the manager, and I told the manager, I said, in the future when I come in to be seated, I will always request that you send a wait person or a whatever you want to call them to my table. Make sure that they're not wearing that damn mask. then I got one of the craziest looks you have ever seen. Of course, she was wearing a mask. But it's incredible, guys. And the timing, you can't ignore the timing of this. And yes, Cal, you're exactly right, because here we have people. We're having a truckers rally in America against this. And so what's going to consume the news 24 hours a day? They're going to make damn sure that the Americans don't hear about this. So, Cal, you were in the trucking industry for 30 years. What are your thoughts, buddy?
It'll probably grow, except for, you know, like I say, if it goes to war with these truckers, I don't know if they'll continue this or not, because, well, that, you know, if there's a war, then they got to be available to, you know, help protect the country and all that by transporting goods back and forth. But the, you know, it actually really did start. I didn't even find out about it until Wednesday night. Apparently it started Wednesday, and it started out of Adelanto, California about noon. And it rolled right by my house, you know, Wednesday. And I, you know, if I'd have known about it, I'd gone down and, you know, checked it out. But they spent the night in Kingman, or just outside of Kingman. And my wife had business in Kingman yesterday morning. So she went out there, and yeah, she went and talked to people and got pictures and all kinds of stuff. So yeah, you know, nobody knows much about it, but yeah, there's some trucks that are starting to roll across the country. It's just, how much PR are they going to get? How much news press are they going to get? Or, like I say, is everybody going to be distracted with the Ukraine and Russia? And will it hold together to get to Washington, D.C.? I don't know. Just kind of got to wait to see how things unfold.
Well, Cal, I got a message yesterday from someone who I've known for many years now. And they were telling me that the leadership of this convoy, that there has been a rethinking, and I think they've done an excellent job here. It seems that they had planned initially a truckers' run to D.C. Is that what your thoughts were, Cal?
Yeah, that was my thoughts. And then other trucks were going to start joining them from different points around the country on the way.
Well, so. It seems that somewhere yesterday, the leadership of this truckers' movement made a change of strategy. And I think it's excellent. But I want to throw it past you guys. They said that, hey, if we make... Look what happened on January the 6th of 2021. And D.C. is pretty well closed down. So they said, what if we decide to do a truckers rally at each state capital? So the lower 48 would have 48 different truckers rallies near the state capital. They said that would be, their thoughts were that this is going to be tougher for the media to close them out, because local media is going to have to cover this in each state, and that the putting together a truckers rally at each state capital, and as I understand it, Cal, in the state of Arizona, my friend there in Arizona says they're planning this in Phoenix. Have you heard anything to this so far?
No, that's the first I've heard of it, Mike. I just logged on to, they have, it's called the peoplesconvoy.org. So they have a website, and they put out official press releases every day, and I haven't logged into it yet today. And they're at, it says today, February 25th, they're marshaling at Russell's Truck Stop and Travel Center. And I think that's over there on the eastern edge of Arizona, almost into New Mexico, if I remember where that truck stop is correctly. So if they don't seem to be heading to Phoenix. This group seems to be heading, you know, to Washington, D.C., so I don't know.
Well, Cal, being a trucker for 30 years, what do you think of that strategy? Were they to do state capitals as opposed to trying to go to D.C.?
I think either way would work. I mean, if you can't, you know, if especially out here in the western states, you know, that's a long way and a lot of money to run a truck all the way to D.C. to where, you know, it's not that bad that if you want to, you know, do a rally and bring attention to your cause in the state capital just so you can get, you know, press coverage, so you can get PR. It's what it's about, is winning the hearts and minds of people. So try to get in the minds of people on what they're doing.
Well,
hopefully they have a clear message on what their demands are, and they're willing to stand and defend what those demands are.
Well, Mike, you know, I think the strategy of going to all the different states is far superior. I think they're going to be walking into a trap if they go into D.C., quite frankly, because the media, like you said, will have much easier to control the whole narrative. And there's going to be the obvious, oh, this is just like the insurrection of January 6th. This is horrible. And as you said, if you get everyone in the different states, they're not going to be able to control the narrative so easily, and they won't be able to make that comparison.
It also forces them to spread their forces out.
That was my point.
Yeah, it's, you know, battlefield tactically, that is a superior move to go after the state capitals, if you put it in that perspective. Tactically, that would be a better move, in my opinion. Plus, you'd probably get a lot more participation because, like I say, it's easier for a truck driver to make it to the state capital than to get all the way back there to Washington, D.C., where the central of power is, and they can concentrate all their forces upon just those ones that make it there. So, yeah, it would seem to make sense to maybe do both. Make it to D.C. is to rally and go to the state capitals.
Well, I agree with that. One of the things that I truly remember, guys, from the 1980s when I was in D.C. and we were working on the POW-MIA issue. And we got together a group of people, and we actually went to the state capitol and formed at the state capitol, I mean the U.S. Capitol. And we formed there as a protest about no accountability for these people who had been left behind. And we had about, you know, maybe 15, 20,000 people. Well, the press said we had about 3,000 to 5,000 people. And then a few weeks later, there was a national gay LGBT rally, whatever it was. And the media grossly misrepresented their numbers in the positive and not the negative. And that was in the 80s. You know, a good friend of mine, he passed away now, but Command Sergeant Major Chuck Eatley and I were sitting there and we looked at this. And he said, wow, isn't this amazing? We had 20 to 30,000 people. They said 3 to 5. They've got maybe 5,000 people here and they're saying the crowd is nearing 100,000. The manipulation of the media, and the problem is, guys, is that the people who know that the government has lied about this medical issue, this health issue, and who knows they have lied about almost everything that they ever do, suddenly, if they bring up a foreign enemy like Russia, everybody suddenly believes it. They're now, oh, my God, the press is telling the truth. They've been lying for 40 years, and suddenly they're telling the truth.
Well, in order to gain legitimacy in that, and they're suddenly telling the truth, the powers that be have Putin invade Ukraine. Like I say, he's a puppet, too. It's just, that's where my mind goes with this, yeah. I agree with you, and that would be why Putin attacks Ukraine, to distract everybody, because it's all a big theater. But back to, yeah, the states, at the state capitals, you'll also get more, curious people, you know, turning out to see what's going on, just to see what this event is, to where if it's all in Washington, D.C., only a few number of people will actually make it there, to where in each state capital, you'll get a lot more people seeing what's actually happening and then being able to contrast and compare in their own minds what the news media tells them and what they actually saw for themselves. So I think, you know, this truckers doing the state thing, that's an awesome idea. If they're going to protest that way, that's an awesome way to go.
Well, I agree with that because, Cal, here's the point. There's probably thousands, tens of thousands of people who would love to attend a rally like this, but they don't have the resources right now or the time to go to Washington, D.C. And I'm just looking at the situation right here where I am in Georgia. I could say, well, man, you know, if I had to go to Washington, D.C. to help these folks or to support them, that's a pretty good haul in bad weather. But it's 81 degrees here today, and, Atlanta's an hour and a half away. I think if they do decide to do this by state capitals, it will be one of the things to their greatest advantage. Because the people are going to show up. Would you have the same number of trucks? Probably not. But does it make a difference, the number that you have? If you have it in 50 or 48, at least the lower 48, you know, of course, I'm not saying that Hawaii and Alaska shouldn't do it, too. But wouldn't that make a huge, wouldn't it be a benefit to the people who actually want to support this? Because stop and think about, Cal, you being there in Arizona and Dave being in California. If look at the expense and everything else involved if you wanted to drive all the way to D.C. to support them.
Yeah, as opposed to just going to Phoenix or Dave going up to Sacramento. Exactly. Just the cost and the time alone. It makes good sense for the truckers to, do it on a state-by-state basis. You probably have more trucks participate.
Well, absolutely. And, guys, I've just been informed that we may be able to bring our guest on through another medium. So hang on. Let's give this a shot. Folks, I hope it doesn't knock us all off again, but let's give this a shot. Stand by, please, for just a moment. And we shall see what happens here. Well, I'm trying to make this phone call, and so far it's not working. So, okay, Patricia, are you here?
We're calling.
I'm sorry, say again.
Okay, hold on for just a minute, Mike. Let me see if I can do this one more time.
All right. Appreciate your help, Patricia.
Well, I don't know if it's gonna work, so we're just gonna try.
All right. Give it a shot, and if it doesn't, we'll get him on by some other means at another date.
Yep. I don't think I'm gonna be able to do this. I had him, but to answer your call, disconnected. John, so.
Yeah, that's the same
thing.
That's
the problem we kept having.
Yeah, it happened to me four times this morning, Patricia.
That's so weird because I used to do this all the time.
Yeah, me too. We've done it. I did it last week with a guest who's been on frequent times, and it worked every time. For some reason, we can't get John.
Oh, that's so weird. Okay, we'll come up with a different plan then. We tried. Thanks, Mike.
Lady. Thank you.
Bye.
Appreciate it. All right, guys, looks like we're back to the discussion about truckers and Russia. Dave, how familiar are you with what happened in 2014 in the Ukraine?
I'm pretty familiar with what happened. As I understand it, it was essentially a color revolution that was really begun by Victoria Nuland, a.k.a. Victoria Nudelman, who is married to Robert Kagan of PNAC. It started with sort of a barrage of propaganda and black money, something in the millions of dollars, $25 million
billions.
Or more.
Billions.
Yeah, billions. Right. You're right. Yes. Yes. Billions were spread throughout Ukraine in propaganda in dirty ops and activating agents. And then it culminated in an actual, you know, sort of false flag where they had snipers on the roof shooting civilians that were actually part of the revolution, but it was blamed on the government. And then they stormed the Capitol and took out the government somehow.
All right, Dave, in 2014, who else was there involved with this other than Victoria Nuland?
Well, I'm not sure. I'm sure there's lots of other people. Who are you referring to?
Well, there were some very significant people who made trips to the Ukraine at that same time in 2014. One of them was Joe Biden.
Right. Yes. Yes.
Okay. One of the other ones who made the trip there in 2014 was Hillary Clinton.
Right.
Another one of the musketeers that made a trip there was John McCain.
Right. So good old John McCain. Right.
They went
that would be, that, Mike, that would be the vice president, the secretary of state, and a senator from the United States.
Yes. Time. Yes. Yeah. Wow. Imagine that.
Happened and to so, be in Ukraine during this overthrow of the government.
Well, the Ukrainians had elected a gentleman, and I'm trying to think of his name, Yukayevich or something like that. Anyway, they had elected him, and he was very he liked Russia. He said so. He was leaning very much toward Russia. Well, 70% of the people in Ukraine speak Russian. Imagine that. So he was favorable towards Russia. So that the three musketeers, Victoria Nuland and their gang, go into the Ukraine and they tell the parliament or whatever you want to call their governing body that, hey, we're going to remove your International Monetary Fund funding if you don't get rid of this creep. So you just told the government you're going to take their money. And so, yes, they went on a deal to force this Russian sympathizer out of their government. And, of course, you know, the guy that takes over for him is pro-NATO and pro-U.S. And at the same time, we created there what's called the Azov Battalion, A-Z-O-V. And what happened with that is they recruited neo-Nazis from all over Europe to come to the Ukraine to be in their army. There are American mercenaries in the Azov Battalion. Now, who has sent billions of dollars to the Azov Battalion? Oh, the CIA, the Christians in Action. Who else has sent billions of dollars there? One Eric Prince, who was the owner of Blackwater until Blackwater caught so much flack for their totally crazy actions in Iraq and Afghanistan that they changed their name to Academy. Now, Eric Prince is getting billions of dollars from the CIA to finance a private army. Who else is donating to Mr. Eric Prince's private army? The Nation of Israel. And so they're promoting NATO and putting missiles on the Russian border. And for you folks who have a problem here, let's look at NATO, North Atlantic Treaty Organization. Pay special attention to the word treaty. And then go to Article 6, Paragraph 2 of the U.S. Constitution, and you will find that a treaty with anyone is superior over our own Constitution. NATO lost its use when in 1989 when the Soviet Union fell apart. There was no longer any use for NATO, but NATO has been kept because agreements with NATO supersede our own laws. Thoughts, Cal?
Well, going back to something you said that Biden, Clinton, McCain, and the other person were there and saying that Ukraine would lose IMF funding. So, in other words, they were there acting on behalf, not of the United States, but on the behalf of the IMF. So, well, does that tell you who they – Well, yeah, I know, but I'm just trying to point that out to people. They weren't over there representing the United States as the vice president, the secretary of state, the senator. They were over there representing the IMF as a vice president, the secretary of state, and the senator of the United States, because the IMF controls the United States and sent them over to do that. I'm just trying to follow the chain of command and where these people are coming from and trying to point that out. This was interest. Yeah, they say it's of the United States, but it's actually an interest of the IMF, because they said they would withhold funding from the IMF. And my question is, where did they get the authority to speak for the IMF? Unless the IMF told them to go and say this.
Well,
to the Ukraine government. I'm just back to that. Where does this narrative really start? We're up to the IMF.
I got
so many questions that roll through my head when you go through this.
Well, pause between them, please.
I can't. They come out that fast. You speak, and I have all these questions that roll through my head all the time. I can't take notes quick enough.
Well, try to restrict yourself to a question, and then we'll try to answer, and then we'll have your next question, buddy.
I'll try.
You're cracking me up.
Oh.
You're cracking me up. Dave, I know you're on limited time here, buddy. Talk to us, please, sir, on your thoughts.
Well, Mike, you did a great job of really laying out, you know, who is behind this coup, because that's what it was. It was a coup. It wasn't a glorious, liberation. It was a coup. And, you know, you look at the IMF, I mean, you know, IMF is just sort of one of the governing bodies that represent the international banking cabal. So, you know, the bankers call the shots in the end. And so obviously America is at the behest of the bankers, the international banking cabal. But Mike, you laid it all out. I mean, it's clear that I think the point you're making is that America initiated this coup. And that's when the war really started. It was an overt act of aggression towards Russia. No question about it.
Well, let's try to draw another link here. You mentioned Miss Newland's husband, Robert Kagan, and he was connected with PNAC. Who else is he connected with, Dave?
Well, his family is actually connected to the old school Russian Revolution, and they had a reputation of being absolutely bloodthirsty and vicious.
And who else is he connected to, Dave?
Well, good question. How deep does the rabbit hole go, Mike?
IMF.
Ah, another arm of the banking cabal.
Yes, he has connections with the IMF, the Bank of International Settlements, and connections with the Federal Reserve.
Wow. And, of course, you know, he is, Jewish, along with Victoria Nuland and the president of Ukraine and so many other bad actors in this play.
Well, Dave, here's the thing, I know we're running close to the first hour here, and we're going to hate to lose you, buddy, have you run off. If I was close enough, I'd put handcuffs on you so you couldn't leave. But here's the point, is that this coup, as you said, was manifested in 2014. And I give Putin a lot of credit for being patient with this. He has worked through now almost 8 years of trying to do this, you know, but the people, I had a guy yesterday who called me and said, "Oh, the Russian invasion. What do you think about this? You know, the Russians have done this. The Russians have done that." And I said, "Well, where did you read this?" And he said, "Well, the Las Vegas Times. And I read it in blah, blah, blah. And I saw it on CBC. And I said, "Are these the same people who told you Biden won the election in 2020? Are these the same people who told you that there was a virus overtaking the country and that in 2 weeks, all it took was 2 weeks to flatten the curve? Are these the same people you're believing now?"
What was his response, Mike?
Good point.
Oh, wow.
That's what I got back. He said, "Good point." It took a while, but I got the back and said, "Good point."
Great.
So, Dave, tell the folks, we got a couple of minutes left here. Tell the folks about your program tomorrow, please, sir.
Yes, tomorrow, you know, from 1 to 4 p.m. Eastern Time, I'm going to have the great Dr. Jim Fetzer on my show to talk about, well, current events and whatever else comes along in the conversation. And, Michael, I'm going to try to stick around here for part of the second hour, so I'll be here as long as I can. And this is just a great conversation we're having. And I think you really nailed it just now with you bring up the other cast of characters that just happened to come to Ukraine. And it really points the finger squarely at this American government that started this entire conflict. They are the aggressors. And like you pointed out, Putin has been very, very restrained. And even now, this is not a true invasion. I think it's a strategic defanging of the Ukrainian military.
Well, there's a couple of points. And when we come back on the flip side, Dave, remind me that there's two points that I'm getting old and feeble and my mind escapes me here. But there are two critical points I want to make about this when we come back. So please remind me, sir.
Okay, will do. Yeah.
And Cal, sit over there and create some more questions, partner.
I'll do that. I'll do that, but try to limit them to one at a time. I just, like I said, they you speak and all these questions start rolling through my head, and if I don't roll them out, then I'm going to forget them myself.
All right, buddy. Well, I love you regardless of what you do there, but,
You just get all excited on all this, Mike. It's my body just starts to run away from me.
I get frustrated sometimes and say to myself, damn it, Cal, let me answer one of them.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Mike.
Yeah. All right, guys, we'll see you on the flip side. Stay with us here on Dare to Think Out Loud.
Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
Interested in the paranormal, murder mystery, real natural law? Do you enjoy interviews with amazing guests? Then join Crypt Rick every Monday night, 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on Revolution Radio. Studio A, freedomslips.com. Crypt Rick's Ivan Baker. Welcome to the Crypt.
Join me at Revolution Radio, Studio B, at 11 a.m. on Saturday for Free Association, when we take a look at philosophy, spirituality, psychology, social issues, and geopolitics. It's every Saturday at 11 a.m. Eastern on Studio B at freedomslips.com.
Enter into a world unseen on Raven Star's Witching Hour. You will encounter eclectic topics from the realm of spirit brought into our matrix of truth. With your host, the Solaris Blue Raven, Solaris will bring you an array of unique guests covering topics from ghostly spirits to amazing anomalies, covert technology, UFOs, and shadowy global events.
And that's right here, Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, Saturdays, midnight till 2 a.m. Eastern Time. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Let the magic rise.
Galactic Interstellar Council on Revolution Radio Studio A, Fridays at 2 p.m. Eastern. Join us as we traverse the starseed paradigm, as expressed in the time-space continuum that we know as the divine expression of love and light. Integrating this conscious unity into the galactic paradigm. So welcome all, both terrestrial beings and galactic beings as one. So be it. You're listening to Revolution Radio.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Any commercial advertising you may hear in this program is of the sole discretion and benefit of the host of this program you are listening to. Revolution Radio does not endorse any commercial products, nor does it accept monetary compensation for on-air advertising of commercial products, nor will it ever. We are and shall remain 100% listener supported. Any product advertising on this program are considered used at higher risk, and Revolution Radio shall not be held liable for any claims or damages received from any product advertised within this program. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps. Thanks for listening while we took that short break here at Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com. And yeah, we're going to get back to your host.
Hey, welcome back, everyone, to Dare to Think Out Loud and to our Friday Circus here with my good friend Cal and Scorpio, who has joined us. And it's always a pleasure to have Dave with us. Gentlemen, we were unable to bring a scheduled guest on today, and through whatever technical difficulties that we had there, seems to be unfortunately through Skype. It was not the fault of Revolution Radio, so because it has worked before without any problems, and today it just didn't work. But anyway, we have jumped the ship and gone into a conversation of the Ukraine and Russia, which is dominating the news now, so nobody's going to be told about what's happening in other places. Wow, okay, looks like Dave had to go, so Dave's not here. Cal, your thoughts, sir?
Well, have you seen any of the video coming out of Ukraine, Mike?
I don't watch television.
Well, I don't either. I caught, whatever somebody's put up on Facebook, and I have to take that at face value too. But I saw video, they said it was from the Ukraine, and part of it showed movement of, military vehicles, and there was like chalked Z's on the military vehicles. There was no definitive marking of what country or what side of the force these military vehicles were on. Now, if I can't identify them, how can anybody else identify if that's friend or foe? I mean, that's one of the reasons they mark vehicles, is so you know if it's friend or foe, right? And it's not clearly marked. So when I saw these vehicles, I couldn't tell if they were Russian vehicles or Ukrainian vehicles, but somebody was filming them. But they all looked like Vietnam War surplus vehicles. And I'm reminded of back in 2015, when I was still driving truck, my route was from Reno to Phoenix, Arizona. Well, Sierra Army Depot is just north of Reno. And in 2015, there was a mass exodus of what looked like surplus Vietnam War military vehicles coming out of Sierra Army Depot on trucks headed down for the Texas coast to be put on ships to be sent overseas. And these look like those vehicles. So I'm just saying this just looks staged to me, is what I'm trying to say.
Well, and let me ask you a question, Cal.
Go ahead.
Okay. Was it not Joe Biden very recently who left behind tremendous military supplies in Afghanistan?
Oh, yeah. And that's not by accident. You know, they blame Joe Biden. The guy can't even find a bathroom by himself. Somebody else made that decision.
Well,
he just
but
gets
I'm,
the blame for it. Yeah,
you know,
I know what you're saying. Yeah, I know what you're saying. Joe Biden
okay.
did, but it
well,
was done on purpose.
Let me ask you a question, Cal. How far is it from Kabul, Afghanistan, to Kiev, Ukraine?
I don't know. Probably a couple thousand miles, maybe.
2,700 miles.
Okay.
A convoy would take approximately 44 hours to traverse that that distance.
But the stuff I saw didn't look like recent American military equipment. Like I say, it looked like Vietnam
right.
War era equipment.
Right. Understand, but let's also take a look at something else. Do you remember the creation of ISIS during the Iraq fiasco?
Oh, yeah, that was created by the CIA. Yes.
Okay. Well, Major General Michael Flynn, as director of the DIA, made it public that the United States had funded and armed and equipped ISIS. One day we see ISIS on the TV running up and down the streets in old Toyota pickup trucks and flags and AK-47s and all this other stuff, and 2 weeks later they're in fine military equipment. Where the hell did that come from? Could that be the military equipment that was left behind when we pulled out of Mosul in Iraq?
Exactly. Well, the other thing is you saw aerial photographs of that fine military equipment when there was a no-fly zone and the only thing that could fly around there was coalition aircraft, which are combat aircraft. So here you have the supposed enemy out in the open desert. And you have military aircraft over them, and nothing happened to them. Really?
Well, let's throw in another one here, Cal. At the end of World War II, we were preparing for a military land invasion of the Japanese islands. So we stockpiled all of the military equipment necessary for an invasion with 500,000 men. And then in August, we get two bombs dropped at Hiroshima and Nagasaki. And then suddenly, Okinawa's sitting there with supplies for an invasion. Where did those supplies go, Cal?
They went to Korea and Vietnam?
Yes, Pyongyang and Hanoi. Where did we have our next two wars?
Like I say, it seems staged, and, you know, like I said, 2015, firsthand experience, truck after truck after truck with some kind of military equipment on it. Half tracks, tanks, personnel carriers, all kinds of it. All of it headed down, you know, running down 395 to 95 to I-40 and on down into Texas. So. Down to the Gulf Coast to be stuck on ships and go overseas. I guess at the time it was, you know, to go arm the next terrorist band that the government was going to create. But I guess it ended up in Ukraine.
Cal, I'm going to throw out one here that we're going to really delve into on Sunday, but I just want to do a little tickler here. According to official sources, how many biological warfare production locations, did the U.S. and other countries have working together? How many of these biological warfare sites did we have in the Ukraine?
something like 15 of them?
Well, your number is spot on. And also some information that I received early this morning from some old sources, including a retired Navy admiral. He says that one of the first targets of the cruise-type missiles that Russia was using in the Ukraine was the biological warfare sites. Have you heard that?
No, I haven't heard that. I'm just, it's like, so why do we have biological warfare sites to begin with? Didn't that all get outlawed by some treaty?
Well, since World War II, well, it, you know, we had to remove all that stuff from Fort Detrick. Fort Detrick, Maryland was just absolutely, and DARPA down at Virginia Tech, they were just attracting too much attention. Even though the CIA and everyone else controlled the media, they were attracting too much attention. So if we're going to, you know, and it is pretty well factually known that the COVID virus was actually produced at Fort, you know, there in Maryland. But then suddenly it goes to Wuhan, China for distribution, I suppose. So we can blame it on someone else. So if we're going to come up with some more biological weapons to use against the people in this country, wouldn't it be convenient to have them made in the Ukraine so we could blame Russia?
Yeah, that would make sense. It follows on the same lines of weapons of mass destructions in Iraq. Follows mm-hmm. those same lines.
Well, and here is the other thing I got from the retired admiral this morning. And this struck me as soon as he said it. It was kind of ominous. And, of course, we'll go into this in detail on Sunday afternoon as well. I got an email I'm not going to go into how I got it. But anyway, he said that he thought it was rather ominous that the Russian submarine force has gone silent.
Well, that would be part of the warning Putin said. If you're going to, you know, outside forces want to step in, don't. I would take him at his word on that.
Well, I would think that having an understanding of how some of these things work, I would think that there was a contingency plan in place that was with all of the various submarine commanders. You know, you might call it Plan A, Plan B, whatever you wanted to call it. And it probably had a code word. And at some point in time, with a directive from Russia, it was said, go to Operation X, which meant go silent. And then they proceed with directions from that time without communication. So without communications, NSA, DIA, and all of our other good friends can't track those guys under the water. So I find it rather ominous that Putin has silenced his submarine force. Because, you know, Cal, we transitioned right before World War II from the battleship to the aircraft carrier. And now aircraft carriers are somewhat obsolete in naval warfare. They won't admit it, but it is. Now the power is in those submarines that can run silent and run deep, as the old saying used to go. Your thoughts on that, Cal?
No, I agree. That, yeah, just the Russian boomers, they go silent. Yeah, I'm sure all of the security agencies of the United States are taking notice and trying to figure out what's going on. Unless, again, this is all theater and everybody is in on it except for the regular people.
Well, it could be, but I just don't see the international bankers owning Putin. I don't see that because over the past few years, how much gold has Russia bought, Cal?
Well, that's just it. Maybe they owned him and Putin's trying to break away. I mean, he's going, wait a minute, this is following along with the international bankers any farther has become a bridge too far for him, and he's dug his heels in the ground against them, which is another possibility. Well, now he's doing what he sees is in best interest of Russia.
Well, you used the analogy before we came on air when we thought we were going to have a guest here, and we're having to, carry this as best we can without that plan. But you made the analogy that Putin may be Russia's JFK.
That's another distinct possibility. Like I say, he's the banksters in charge. They were fine to put up with Putin, when he first became prime minister of Russia after the fall of, a little bit after the fall of the Soviet Union. And he's gone along with them so far as he could, but it's gotten to the point where he said, no more. I'm going to dig in my heels. He's not going to go along with them anymore. And it's interesting to see what will happen if that's the case.
Well, Cal, I am reminded, having looked in the National Archives and have seen that when during 62, during the Cuban Missile Crisis, the Joint Chiefs of Staff met with John Kennedy, Robert Kennedy, and I'm trying to think of the Secretary of State at the time, Dean, whatever his name was, Acheson, whatever it was. But anyway, they had the meeting about what to do. And during that meeting, and folks, this is in the National Archives, this is not hearsay, I actually saw the documents themselves. During that time, Curtis LeMay, who was Air Force Chief of Staff, proposed, because the Russians had put missiles into Cuba, that we fire missiles and nuke Berlin. And the president asked, the good general, what if there were, if we did that and Russia retaliated with a nuclear strike, either by aircraft or by missile, If they were to get through at least maybe one or two missiles or one or two bombers and hit the U.S., what would you see the casualty rate? And, of course, Curtis LeMay says, General LeMay says, well, Mr. President, we have calculated those, and we see that the possible loss of 10 million people. This is in 1962. And JFK asked him, is that pretty accurate? And he said, yes, that is a pretty accurate assessment. Well, as Dean Rusk, I'm sorry, I had the name wrong a minute ago, as Dean Rusk and JFK and RFK were leaving the meeting, and it's in the notes of both RFK and Dean Rusk, JFK turned to them, pointed toward the room where the Joint Chiefs were, and said, those sumbitches are crazy. In whose world is the loss of 10 million American lives acceptable? Your thoughts, Cal?
Well, in the powers that be, the money men in charge, that would be totally acceptable to them. But another broader point of that is it wasn't okay for Russia to park nukes outside of U.S. borders, but somehow it's okay for the United States and NATO to park nukes just outside of Russia's borders. I mean, there's kind of a hypocrisy going on here, isn't there?
Well, America today, Cal, in my opinion, I know I'm not going to make any friends here, but America is full of hypocrites. We today, how many people in this country, how many millions of people in this country today are going, look at that tyrant in the Ukraine. What is he doing? Look at that. He has no business being in the Ukraine. What is he doing? He is the devil's seed. How many millions of Americans you think are saying that today, Cal?
Well, probably most of them, because they repeat what the TV tells them to repeat.
So you're trying to tell me they are incapable of thinking for themselves?
Yeah. They're not incapable. I think they choose not to because it's easier.
So it's a choice.
It's a choice.
It's a comfortable choice.
Yes. Yes. Ultimately, it comes down to the individual. Yes.
So why would I want to actually think about something? But, you know, these are the people. How many do you think these people know that we overthrew a duly elected president, chairman, whatever you want to call him, in Iran in 1953?
Very few people know about that. Project Ajax, Operation Ajax.
And why did we do that?
Because the duly elected prime minister of Iraq Iran was going to nationalize oil industry, because the precursor to British Petroleum, whoever it was, would not have been able to profit from a nationalization of the Iranian oil fields, because they weren't living up to their agreement, to where Iran got their portion out of what they pulled out of the ground. So the prime minister decided, well, the heck with you. We're going to kick you out. We're going to have nationalize our own oil production, and we can't have that. And that's – so they overthrew them. Between Operation Boot from MI6 and Operation Ajax run by the CIA here in the States.
And so then who ends up with the oil resources of the people of Iran, the U.S. government and the British government?
Yeah.
Do you think there's anybody in Iran that might remember this?
Well, yeah, the people in Iran did it. That's what the whole part of what the Iranian Revolution, the student revolution, especially part of the portion of the Iranian Revolution was all about, was because the United States removed the prime minister and installed the Shah of Iran, who was Western leaning, but pretty brutal to his people. And when he caught cancer and had to abdicate the throne, he came to the United States, and the people in Iran wanted him shipped back to Iran so he could stand trials for the crimes he committed against the people. The United States refused. The student movement of the Iranian Revolution then overthrew the U.S. Embassy and held the hostages captive for that many days. And their only request was that the Shah of Iran be returned so that he could stand trial for the crimes that he committed against the Iranian people. And the United States refused to do that. That's what the whole hostage crisis was about.
Yeah. Well, that's the whole point, is Americans are unaware.
And how many really are aware that the United States helped put the Ayatollah Khomeini?
Yes.
The Carter administration helped move him back into power.
Yes. And look at, good old Saddam Hussein, that we were all ready to, hang that bastard, let's kill him, all this other stuff. How many people knew that he was an operative of the CIA prior to that? How many people know that Manuel Noriega in the Panama, where we had an attack back in the early 90s, where we attacked Panama, how many people know? I think the military called that Operation Just Because. No, they called it Operation Just Cause. I'm sorry. Anyway, Noriega helped until he became not useful anymore. So then you get a military invasion.
Yes.
We had the same thing with Saddam Hussein. Saddam Hussein, and this is hard for a lot of people to believe because he was the boogeyman de jure of the media, but Saddam Hussein had a country in which Christians in the Middle East had their own society, and they were not hassled. They were not bothered by anyone. The Armenians, they had their Christian society. There is no Christian society in Iraq today since our invasion in 2003.
The same thing in Syria.
Yes.
The Christians were – there were no Christian refugees until the United States intervened in that. And I can't remember his name off the top of my head, the head guy in charge of Syria, he protected the Christians from persecution. Until they started destabilizing Syria, the Christians were safe and sound and happy and got along with their Muslim brothers, no problem. Until it got stirred up. on purpose by the West. Well, okay, by the way, and Israel.
Absolutely.
All to the benefit of a greater Israel.
Well, Cal, put on your prognostication goggles and tell me, I've got to take a short 2-minute break here, but put on your prognostication goggles and talk about where you see this going. I shall be right back.
Where do I see this going? I couldn't tell you where I see this going for sure. Like I said, mostly it seems to be theater to me. It's structured. The videos I'm seeing are not modern, you know, military aircraft or military ground equipment. Now the aircraft, you know, the helicopters and aircraft, they seem to be more advanced, but I can't tell if what side of the forces they're on. So it's anybody else, right? What's going to happen is pretty much anyone's guess, but I'm sure the powers that be have it somewhat planned out how it's going to fall out. Unless Putin's gone rogue on them, then that changes the whole ball game again.
Wow. But, so we are not looking, you see, of course, we know that the international bankers are going to take all kinds of advantage of this in the Ukraine, and we're going to see a tremendous rise in fuel prices coming up, which means a tremendous rise in commodities at the shelf, providing there's any at the shelf. So what do you see here? Oil is now at $93 a barrel. If it jumps to 97, 98, you know, what are we looking at, Cal? You are a retired trucker.
Well, you're looking at, you know, increased prices and more loss of more shortages. Is what I'm seeing more hardships down the road, more austerity. And I don't know. I part of it's by design, because when things get rough, well, then the government or the powers that be come along with some kind of strongman to offer a solution to everybody's woes. And usually that solution requires a loss of liberty and a loss of freedom. And that's where I see this going. It's orchestrated to get the people to willingly surrender more of their freedom and more of their liberty, because things are going to be getting way more uncomfortable, just so people can be more comfortable again.
Well, that comfort seems to be everything. I think it was Mao Zedong, he called it the three bowl of rice a day theory. Yeah, as long as my people have three bowls of rice a day, I can do anything I want to. And in America, if we have a six pack of beer, a few fast food sandwiches, and football, NASCAR, or basketball, we are good.
There's just things that, you know, when you think of it, you know, some kind of economic sense, it's like, okay, the economy sucks really bad right now. You know, things are way expensive, yet housing's still going crazy. You know, I mean, people put their house up for sale and they're selling it within 2 weeks for more than they ask, because big corporations or some big entities coming in and buying up a lot of property. And I'm not seeing the return on investment for them unless they're spending money, because, you know, the money's been given to them by the IMF or the international bankers. And this is all just part of this great big transfer of wealth that's going on. And all of this is going on. COVID, Russia. All of it is just a cover for the transference of wealth that's going on.
Well,
just
Cal,
to keep everybody distracted and give them excuses.
What if I gave you a couple of $1 billion in counterfeit money and told you to run around and buy up a bunch of properties for me?
That'd be great, Mike. Go out and buy all kinds of property, and then you'd have the properties, because I wouldn't be able to pay you back, but you'd make sure I was taken care of, maybe. I don't know. I could just be a useful, willing idiot and be taken out like Saddam Hussein or Muammar Gaddafi or any of those others if I'm not useful anymore.
Well, you know, Cal, our good friend Paul English, there on the other side of the pond, he says in a conversation with him not too long ago on one of the programs, he said the exact same thing's happening in Europe. That suddenly people are running around, someone puts their house up for sale, and someone comes in and says, hey, I'll give you more for that than you asked for.
And yeah, in so cash.
That is, yeah, that's not just in America. That's happening in, could it be happening in all of the countries that are controlled by the international bankers?
Well, yeah, and control of the land and control of the resources is control of all wealth. And that control translates into control of the people. And that's where it's headed. I mean, the people won't, you won't have a choice anymore. You will have nothing and you will like it. Because those of us who don't like it will be eliminated.
Well, Cal, here's the thing to stop and think about. If a government has a whole bunch of baby boomers on Social Security and various retirement plans, what better way to save money than to get rid of those people?
Well, they're just useful eaters anymore, you know, unuseful eaters anymore. You know, me being one of them.
Well, if I wanted to do that with a virus?
Well, yeah, you could. And you could do it.
Go ahead.
And it also serves more purposes. It creates more fear into people. It creates more control. It's like a two-pronged fork for the powers that be.
Well, speak to my proposition that the very essence of government is fear and a lie.
That's how governments operate, yes. They have to. They have to, because if they didn't, people really wouldn't need it anymore.
Well, if the government actually told us what they were doing and actually told us the truth, how many people would want a government?
Yeah, most people wouldn't if they, you know, when you look behind it, it's like, yeah, I mean, look at right now. I mean, they're sitting on the you know, nuclear brinkmanship all over again. And, you know, we're talking all of humanity in this, and this is over the egos of, you know, the people. You know, a few, relatively few in comparison to the total population of the world, people in charge doing all of this, and nobody can stop them. Is the thing? How do you stop them?
Well, how do you stop, if you are in a baseball game, how do you stop the game, Cal?
I guess you just quit playing the game.
Aha!
Or hope for a rainout, yeah.
Aha! So you just quit playing.
Yeah. How do you beat the odds in Vegas? You just quit playing. You don't go.
Well, Cal, I've had, I don't know, over the years that I've been doing this, 30-plus years now, I've had, you know, just hundreds, maybe more than that, of people saying, well, okay, well, what's your solution? And I said, well, if you want a solution, the first thing you have to do is stop playing in the game you're in. If you're in a game in Vegas and you know it's crooked and you're losing your money faster than you can, you know, faster than you can make it, wouldn't you want to quit the game and get out of it first?
Yeah, I would, but, you know, there's a lot of people who think they can beat the house, and Vegas has gotten pretty rich off of them.
Yeah, that's what I told my
son.
I'll never forget the first time I took our kids through Vegas, and it was probably late 80s. And I took our kids through Vegas, and My son had never been there before, and he's maybe 11, 12 years old, and he says, wow, look at this. He said, Dad, why don't we stop? Why don't you gamble, and maybe you can make some money? And I said, son, do you see all these buildings? And he said, yeah. He said, they're fantastic, aren't they? And I said, they didn't build them because somebody won their money.
Well, when you look at the empire, the United States empire, yeah, it follows that same line.
Oh, Cal, I tell you what, sometimes it is just absolutely, it's unreal. You know, it's, you try to tell people and you say, okay, Cal, let me throw a hypothetical at you. What if, let's just put it on a small scale, in a state. What if in a state, just as a starting point, what if everyone in a state or a great majority of the people in the state said, oh, well, guess what? My license tag comes up for renewal this month. I ain't paying. What would happen, Cal?
Well, a few people would get, you know, pulled over and cited for no registration, but it would become overwhelming to the authorities to where they couldn't enforce it. And then, then that system will break down. Instead of the people breaking down, the system will be broken down, because if they can't enforce their laws and mandates, that's what happened the fall of the Soviet Union. They couldn't no longer enforce upon the people what they're trying to do. People finally stood up, and finally the enforcers, you know, I guess they come to a decision. Are we going to enforce this or not?
Well, if all the guys, you know, if we suddenly had a state, let's just take a hypothetical state, a state out there says, okay, we're not going to renew our license tags anymore because we bought the damn things one time and paid for them. That should be sufficient. So we're not buying, getting tag renewal. And so then a great majority of the public, say 80 to 85%, said, no, we're not doing that anymore. Are they going to arrest all of those people and have trials for all of those people in a system? Would it not block the system up to where the system couldn't function?
Yeah.
And I mean, a protest doesn't have to be massive. You know, we don't need 15 million people to show up in D.C. Do it at home. Take your measures at home. You know, everybody's looking for a magic bean. And that, oh, well, we can take this to court and we will win because we have a magic bean. It's the Fifth Amendment, or it's this, or the Article 5, or it's, you know, this, that, or the other. But the problem is, to make that work, you have to ask the slave master to say it's okay.
You're back into Vegas trying to beat the house.
Right.
The government controls the courts.
And so the government and the Supreme Court can choose not to hear your case. And people, so can the local courts, state courts, choose not to hear your case. No matter what theory you're using. There are no magic beans to control a government that was created to be corrupt. Your thoughts, Cal?
Well, the government was, created out of corruption to be corrupt. It was created out of fraud, secrecy, and deceit, and false advertising. So it's been corrupt and a fraud since the get-go. It just taking this long to really fully blossom into the tree of despotism has become. And it, not just here in the United States, apparently it manifests itself around the world. I mean, why is there still NATO? Why? Where is the necessity of putting nukes in Ukraine in the first place? Who put nukes where first? You know, I mean, Russia is Russia. They've had nukes. Why are there nukes in the Ukraine?
Well, you know, when Americans, back in 62, when Americans were going absolutely batshit crazy about missiles in Cuba, how many people were aware that we had missiles on the Russian border in Turkey at the time?
Probably in more places than just Turkey, you know.
Well, we know they were in Turkey because that was part of the settlement with Khrushchev between JFK and Khrushchev, was that Khrushchev would remove the missiles from Cuba if the U.S. removed the missiles from Turkey. Khrushchev removed, at least as far as we know, a portion of the missiles from Cuba. We never removed the missiles from Turkey.
You mean the United States doesn't hold up to those treaties and agreements, Mike?
Really? I know, Cal. call 911. You're going to need some help.
Oh.
Yeah, no, they don't.
Oh, the American Empire doesn't live up to its treaties. It's above the law, really?
Yeah.
It's its own empire. It makes up its own rules as it goes along. And other countries, the United States, I mean, you know, the right to be armed is a natural right. So the United States has a right to have arms, but yeah, other countries aren't allowed to have the right to have arms as well. When, you know, to me, I would think that most countries would see the United States as the biggest threat. I do. If I was in some small country, I would actually see the United States as the biggest threat to world peace.
Well,
especially over the last 20 years.
Military strategy will tell us, Cal, that the enemy we need to defeat is the enemy closest to us, which could most likely do us harm. So as a people who believe in rightful liberty, who is our closest enemy?
Government. The United States government is the enemy, clear and present danger, in my mind's eye.
Wow, well, you know, you're probably not going to make a lot of friends with that, Cal.
Oh, I'm going to be called a Putin sympathizer, a Russian commie, or whatever, because I don't, you know, don't stand up and salute their flag and sing their special song and go chant USA, USA, USA when I see the USA as being irresponsible with the powers that it has. Let's put it that way. I mean, there, you know, the United States is a superpower, obviously, but it has acted, in my opinion, acted irresponsibly as a superpower in all these conflicts around the world. I mean, what other country has so many bases in so many other countries? Yeah, people complain about, you know, illegal immigrants, you know, violating the sovereignty of this country, but have no problem with armed troops, U.S. troops invading other countries, sovereign countries, with no declaration of war. I don't. Am I stepping on that hypocrisy theme again?
Yeah, I think you might not be stepping on it. You might have just taken a crap on it.
Just trying to point that out. It just amazes me. You can't go around and finger other countries and people for what they're doing and not take a hard, honest look at what this country is doing, has done, and is continuing to do, and where it is going. What's the purpose of NATO? After the fall of the Soviet Union, what was the purpose of NATO? Why wasn't Russia integrated back into commerce?
Wait a minute. As from the inner city, I would tell you, I'd be done told you why we keep NATO. And that is because of that T. That T, because it's a treaty, because of Article 6, Section 2 of the Constitution, we can sign a treaty that overrules the standing law of the land. As flawed as it is, we can overrule the standing law of the land with a treaty. That's been proved in court. The crooked courts. It's been proved there that a treaty supersedes the Constitution of the United States and your Bill of Rights. So if the standing government wants to do away with any rights you think you might have, all they have to do is sign a treaty with NATO, and you're toast.
Well, that means that the entities involved in the treaty are in charge and not the United States also. They just use the United States as a scapegoat, or the government of the United States as puppets, to do whoever's in charge of this treaty.
Well, our good friend out there in Idaho, our good friend in Idaho made a comment which is exactly true, and, you know, our phraseology was probably wrong. The U.S. is not irresponsible. The United States government is evil.
Okay, it's both. It is evil. And it is it's exercising its powers irresponsibly.
Well, the United States government is a serial killer.
Oh, exactly. Who wouldn't hesitate to kill its own people or its own soldiers or allow whatever to happen to its own captured soldiers to happen if it serves the best interest of the general welfare of the United States?
Well, when you order a soldier to war to face possible death, capture, what have you, for a lifetime of nightmares, when you send them off and you know the reason you're sending them is a lie, you are evil. You're not just making a mistake. You are evil.
Totally.
When you tell old people that they have to die alone in a nursing home because and you're not going to allow their closest family to come be with them at their time of death, you are evil. When you lie to the American public on a daily basis on the squawk box with the plastic heads, you are evil. This until people understand that the government they think they can fix with a magic bean or whatever it is evil, until you accept the fact it is an evil entity.
But you mean we can't vote for lesser evil our way out of this evil?
You know, Cal, that is one of those craziest things I've ever had happen in my life. I was sitting in a restaurant with one of my very best friends from Colorado. He's a preacher. And we had a deal that we met every Tuesday morning for breakfast for years. And we're sitting in, this is 2016, and we're sitting in a restaurant. Benny's restaurant in Cortez, Colorado. And we're sitting there, we're having breakfast, and there's some folks next to us, and obviously they're tourists, and they're asking us about this and asking us about that. And then suddenly the guy comes up and says, "Wow, what do you think about it? Looks, this thing is really looking great. You know, Trump looks like he's really got a chance, and this is really looking good. What do you guys think?" And Raymond and I looked at each other, and then we looked back at him, and we said, "Are you saying that voting for the lesser of two evils?" Because he had already gone on a tirade about Hillary. We're saying, "Are you telling us that voting for the lesser of two evils is good?" And he said, "Yes." He said, "If we keep voting for the lesser of two evils, eventually we'll have no evil." That was exactly what he said, Cal. I was stunned. That is the mindset of the political faction of this country.
Yeah, it makes no sense when you look at it. When you apply critical thinking skills to that, that actually makes no sense. When you apply critical thinking skills and you go, "Well, people have been voting for lesser of evil," it shouldn't surprise people when things turn out evil, even if it's a lesser evil. It's still evil.
Well, Cal, years ago, I changed that phrase in my writings. I changed that phrase. I no longer say the lesser of two evils. Now my comment is the evil of two lessers.
Yeah, that's pretty fitting.
But I was stunned that, and obviously, you know, the man wasn't stupid. Maybe he made a case for that. But someone so caught up in political bliss that they could say, well, if we vote for the lesser of evils and keep doing it, eventually we'll have no evil, is exactly 180 degrees out of phase with the truth. Because if you keep voting for the lesser of two evils, eventually all you have is evil. And you have agreed by voting for the lesser of two evils that you accept evil. And when you accept evil, how can you complain about what evil does to you? I'm sorry. Go ahead, Cal.
No, I mean, when you vote for the lesser of two evils, like you said, you have accepted evil. You have chosen evil. You've made a choice. You chose evil. There's another choice out there, and that's not to choose either of the evils, which would involve not voting for an evil. It's not hard to do. It just don't vote.
Well, let's not forget that.
How hard is that to not vote? Not support the system that is oppressing you?
Well, absolutely. And let's not forget good old Emma Goldman, who said that voting would actually change anything that'd make it illegal. And that is absolutely true. And, Cal, it's been fun today. We kind of got off on a bumpy start because our guest, we were unable to bring our guest on. And, John Jay, I really apologize for that. And we're going to try to see if we can't get that fixed in the future.
Mike.
Sir, go ahead.
Let's put a plug in for the people. It's John Jay Singleton. And the website, if you're curious about it, and it's about how to try to fight against the mandates using the ADA, and the website is called The Zunga, T-H-E-Z-U-N-G-A. And for those out there that are interested, .com or .org, one of the two. For those interested in doing it, go to the website. They've got a couple of videos up. Take a listen to it and see what they've got to say. So sorry, John Jay, if we couldn't get you on today, if you're listening, sorry. We'll give you a plug anyway. Hopefully we can steer some people towards you if, you know, help you out.
Yeah, it's thezunga.com, T-H-E-Z-U-N-G-A.com. Folks, give it a look-see and see what, John Jay has to say. And, you know, and hopefully we can get him on. I would really like that. And Patricia Aiken, I appreciate you trying to help us get that done. Cal, let me mention, as we finish this up, the Telegram sites that we have. And one is called Teach Me True History. And on that, on Tuesday evenings at 9 p.m. Eastern, we have a live discussion. And Cal, you've been joining that. I certainly appreciate that. And also have the but Rebel Madman, and then I also have Constitutional Fraud, and my website is rebelmadman.org, and we are working to get that up fully running, and I say we, I am, and it is a task doing everything else I have to do, and I just want to thank all you people. My almost four-year-old granddaughter went in yesterday for her MRI after fighting cancer for neuroblastoma since 2018. She was found to be completely void of cancer markers, and the MRI was fantastic. And so it's a happy time for me, buddy, and especially for that little girl. But also on Sunday night now, 6 p.m. Eastern, I will be on with D.W., that retired airline pilot from out there in Alabama. And then also with my good friend, Blackbird 9, from up in North Kakalaki. So we will be talking about Russia, Russia, Russia. And Blackbird 9 is also a former attendee, I don't know what better phrase to use, of the No Such Agency or the NSA, whichever one you want to call it. But we're going to do an in-depth look, and I promise you that Blackbird 9 and DW are going to bring a lot to the table on this discussion. So, folks, I hope you'll be able to tune in and help us. And tomorrow, jump over there and give good old Dave Scorpio a listen. He and Gouverneur Giuseppe. So, Cal, any parting words, my friend?
Well, I just want to thank you for that. Teach me true history in that Tuesday night kind of open forum roundtable discussions you get going. I really enjoyed those and really appreciate the participation of all the other people in there. I love being able to hear other people's opinions, ideas, their research and what they bring to the table, because as you and I both know, Mike, there's no way in heck there's enough time on in one lifetime to study all of history. And somebody else has done some studies and brings to the table stuff that you might not have seen, you might have missed, or brings other things to the table. And it's really a fulfilling exercise. I mean, it went for almost 2 hours last Tuesday, and it was it could have gone longer. It was just, you know, getting really late on the East Coast for you people. I could have gone another couple hours with that discussion last Tuesday. I was enjoying it thoroughly.
It has been a great discussion, and I've really enjoyed it as well. And it's always good. You know, you can write stuff, you can post stuff, you can put up lessons, but that interaction is just something that is just different. And that interaction, and you actually real time, you're talking with people and you're looking at their ideas and their thoughts. And I am really glad that we're able to do that conference on Tuesday nights. And folks, if you would like to join us, please do. It's on Telegram, and it's Teach Me True History. And if you will get in touch with us, you know, you can contact me on Telegram, and we will be happy to add you to the list. Would love to have more people out there. So it looks like it's about time. We should have the music at any time. Cal, kind of round us out here.
Well, I just wanted to continue the plug. You know, you not only get the roundtable, but you get, there's a daily lesson on all three of those channels on Telegram that Mike, you know, takes the time to put up. And recently we've just been going through the day-by-day proceedings of the Constitutional Convention. And you can see how things came about. And then you can understand why we are where we're at. Thanks, Mike.
Thanks, Cal. Thanks, folks, for tuning in to Dare to Think Out Loud. Have a wonderful weekend.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio.
Enter into a world unseen on Raven Star's Witching Hour. You will encounter eclectic topics from the realm of spirit brought into our matrix of truth. With your host, the Solaris Blue Raven, Solaris will bring you an array of unique guests covering topics from ghostly spirits to amazing anomalies, covert technology, UFOs, and shadowy global events.
That's right here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, Saturdays, midnight till 2 a.m. Eastern Time. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Let the magic rise.
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs, government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
We talk about decentralization and that.